With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. The transfer window slammed shut and Newcastle's wholesome fairy tale continues. It's Wednesday the 1st of February. I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Vidisha Hantaraja.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Hello, everyone. We're back. It's Wednesday. The transfer nonsense is done. The Carabao Cup rolls on.
Jimbo's in the seat.
Jimbo's in the seat.
Yes, Vish.
Jimbo's in the seat.
Jimbo's in the seat.
He won't
sing.
I'm in the seat.
Yeah, he doesn't sing. Jim refuses to sing.
I was trying to be my own hype man.
Yeah, flavour, flave. Yeah, blandy bland.
Blandy bland. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's me.
That's yeah. He's very harsh.
Are you Mr. Moon or Mr. Sunshine to Marcus?
I don't know what that
Jules
means.
Is the devil. We've got those.
Yeah, they can't, okay. So the sun comes out, but they can't come out at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like a kind of thing, like a clock.
I'm going to try my best to be a solar eclipse. Just
okay,
absolutely
nice.
Blow your mind.
Okay.
Nice.
Solar eclipse to Marcus's moon.
Yeah.
Jules is Kramer or someone. But yeah, I like that.
Yeah, let's keep mixing metaphors like this throughout the show. So Newcastle, they're going to Wembley.
Mad, isn't it? I mean, it was pretty incredible to watch because, I suppose we should say it straight away, because of the way that they've accrued their wealth. I suppose they haven't accrued it, they've just been given it but being taken over. And the way it's been utilised have been quite different things. I think if you look at the way that Eddie Howe's got Newcastle playing, you can see, you know, the fact that the squad filled that little bit together. Obviously, that's helped by being supplemented by good players. But then you see like a night like that at St. James's Park and you see the feeling and just the noise as well. Like,
yeah.
It's remarkable.
You knew it was going to happen. As soon as I was on the show after they beat Southampton at Southampton. Southampton have got no hope. Like, no. No hope now. There's no way you can see a team. They'd take a very, very good team indeed to go to St James's Park in this kind of era and this kind of atmosphere and get a positive result there. Yeah. And Southampton aren't that team.
Not at all. No, I mean, the atmosphere was amazing. Local lad DJ Shaq performed in the stadium pre-match, and Ali McCoy said, I'll have to think about him for my next birthday party, which
he was loving
basically, that's like the top gig, isn't it? Ali McCoy's birthday party.
If you're a local
DJ, that's absolutely incredible stuff. But I thought, actually, the Newcastle team were very sort of impressively collected and comfortable, given how much a cup final means to the fans and to everyone around the club, and how obvious it is that that's the case. There was no hint of any pressure of that.
No, and
which
I think
is really impressive.
And I think also you have to work really hard to get out of that shadow when you're Newcastle United that, oh, at some point this is going to go wrong.
Exactly.
Because some clubs have that profile, and it's not just because of Kevin Keegan, although he has contributed to it, that at some point it's going to kind of collapse. And
pushing over DJ Shaq's desk as he trips over.
Speaking of DJ Shaq, have you seen what he looks like? He looks exactly like Bruno Guimarães.
Yes, yeah. Right. So
I wonder whether he styles himself on a particular player that he likes at that point.
Oh,
every
that's
week.
Not a bad shout.
Every week, or maybe when that player moves on, he has to style himself as another one. Almost like a DJ version of getting a shirt with a name on the back. But I was just going to say that, you know, the players showed no sign of that, did they? They showed no sign of thinking, oh, God, at some point this is going to go wrong. They obviously aren't affected by that kind of attitude that some of the fans may be. And to be fair, the fans generated an amazing atmosphere. I mean, they weren't going to be denied.
No.
It was never, especially as Longstaff gets a couple of goals. He should have had a hat trick. He was amazing. It's interesting that, I don't know, Vicious, this is kind of a broadsheet journalist angle. This is a bit of a Henry Winter question, but is it interesting that the guy who gets the two decisive goals is actually a local fella and not a guy who's come in for millions and millions of pounds?
Does make the match report that little bit easier, yes.
Henry Winter would do 1,000 words on that.
Yeah.
Whereas I would take a sideways glance.
Yeah. You take a sideways glance at cricket?
Yeah, I do, often. Yeah. It's the best place to watch it. I think it does matter because I think the thing that would help Newcastle fans, particularly, you know, you think of someone like Pete, the thing that will help someone like Pete in terms of his stance on the owners, warm to the project a bit more, is being in touch with the local area. And I suppose it's a lot of what Man City owners did. It's what Newcastle owners are doing very well. There is a connection to that because they know how easy it is to, I mean, that's part of sports washing, really, isn't it?
Entirely, yeah, exactly.
But when you think about it from a purely football squad basis, I think it does matter. Even if, I suppose, the local thought would be, as you articulated before, those nerves, that sense of shit, this is going to go wrong somewhere. Having someone like that just builds that attachment a lot quicker as well. And it does matter. And it's interesting that even before the new owners, there was talk of him leaving, whether it was out on loan or whether it was just actually, you know, permanently. And with all due respect, when you looked at the squad when they got taken over, even before the signing of Bruno Guimarães, who was one of the first through the door with this new regime, you know, you probably highlighted him as one that he'd probably on his way out. And yet he seems, you know, quite an important point of that, certainly in the way that he breaks from midfield to attack. And he's, to be fair, I think he's been due a few goals. He's missed a few sitters, and I think Newcastle fans have been quietly frustrated by his output. But
I think also, you could use him as a lens with which to say that Eddie Howe's done a job that's a little bit more impressive than just compiling loads of players.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, realistically, would anyone have said that, you know, they would be in third in the Premier League and in Wembley for a cup final, and Sean Longstaff would have started 16 Premier League games?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Longstaff's a funny one, isn't he? Because he was actually linked with Man United for a long time.
When he broke through, he's
25 now, though.
Yeah, but he was very rated. Clearly, there was a ceiling that was visible for those in the know. And again, he's almost like a sort of acid test for Howe, isn't he? Like, he can get those players near to where their top level ability is.
And he's
doing a fantastic job there. One person who wasn't at the game because he couldn't get a ticket was Nobby Solano. He was trying his best. In an interview, he said, what's that bar called where the fans go before the game and sing? I'll go there with my trumpet and play, and hopefully someone will give me a ticket.
That's not going to help.
No, I think...
Well, get him out of here. get him out of here, get him in the stadium.
Nobby Solano in Newcastle, though, they'll probably want to keep him in there, won't they?
I don't know if you saw this. I think it might have been a week ago now. But obviously, because Newcastle are doing well, what you're going to do is you're going to see a lot of people coming out of the woodwork. And now, actually, when you think about it, there are quite a lot of former Newcastle players as pundits, I suppose, celebrities in the football world. So, if you know, they're, obviously you've got Alan Shearer on Match of the Day, but you've got various others dotted around who, whether on TV or radio, are, you know, associated with the club. And I think it was last week, Jose Enrique, who obviously played at Newcastle, but then went to Liverpool and has constantly, you know, his persona has been Liverpool player, Liverpool player. He came out and he tweeted something about being back in Newcastle and like really enjoying it here. And Newcastle fans laid into him for jumping on the bandwagon. It is genuinely hilarious.
One place he doesn't like to be is the woodwork.
So and Liverpool obviously are having a poor season. Yeah. Like, oh, fuck that.
Enrique is so into this stuff that he pops up on like the comments on Instagram posts and stuff, like constantly.
Really?
He's just everywhere.
Right, yeah.
He wants to be a part of it.
He
wants to be a part of it. It's fair enough. I'll tell you what, one of the highlights of the game, well, not highlights, probably the wrong word, but one of the big talking points of the game was that Bruno Guimarães, speaking of him, that sending off, because that was horrific.
I mean, yeah, his reaction to it was incredible as well. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I can kick people, can't I?
Did Sky Sports have to show it like 40 times? They showed it, because if you, I'd love to know if someone can tweet us and tell us exactly how many times Sky showed it, because they've got the VAR element to it, which means it has to be watched in various different speeds about 14 times. Mm. That Sky just kept showing it. At one point, I reckon they must have shown it 15 times.
I think possibly that was because they were still determining whether he was going to be sent off for it or not, right? I think it wasn't obvious.
But, I mean, if you can't see that.
Sending off to me.
Sure, really? That's obvious. It's a massively obvious sending
off. Yeah, no, but the referee was deliberating, right? So the pundits deliberated along with it.
Yeah, I guess. It just felt like a bit like overkill.
Yeah, I think they do that. So they don't show it when they know it's been a serious injury.
I know that, yeah. I understand that.
So I think, is he all right? We don't know that, but it's not broken. Keep showing it.
Yeah, we'll just keep watching it over and over again.
So, I mean, if Newcastle do win a trophy, is this the feel-good story of the year?
Bloody hell. do you know what? There are a lot of people out there who say that, you know, it's morally reprehensible anyway if you're a billionaire. Mm. Like, as in, there's no way of becoming a billionaire without some kind of exploitation along the line, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful about drawing kind of these arbitrary moral kind of objections to certain things. But it's kind of, you know, like I said earlier, we have no choice but to cover it. We have to. It would be preposterous for any media outlet, however big or small, to say we are going to make a football show and we're just going to arbitrarily not talk about Newcastle because we don't personally like the ownership. Like, we shouldn't have to make these decisions. So ultimately, we've got no choice but to cover it. But I mean, you have to have a very hard heart to begrudge Newcastle fans who've, you know, not really won anything for a very, very long time.
Especially after Mike Ashley just sort of sat on their club.
Yeah.
Sat on their ambitions.
Sat like, on Alan Shearer.
Yeah, exactly.
Kicked him out. Yeah.
And then vomited in their dreams.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And also added to the whole laughing stock thing. You know, we touched on it earlier, the whole sort of banter club thing, for want of a better term, is a very difficult thing to shake.
Yeah.
And there's no hint of it at Newcastle.
I think the thing that, you know, I suppose cast even darker light on the Mike Ashley reign is, you know, Newcastle have spent money, and obviously wages are a factor here that people don't really talk about, because you only attract big players by offering them big wages.
Definitely.
But evidently it shows, like, with a bit of coaching investment, where they could have been in certain points where they seem to be on their, at least have some semblance of stability, and yet his constant refusal to actually invest and to do anything good, full stop, beyond, make, you know, sticking a fucking big Sports Direct mug of a label on top of their stadium, just shows, like, you know, that stasis. They're lucky, to be honest, because we see what that stasis does to other clubs, you know, including Southampton.
Yeah. And it's where we are now as a sport.
Yeah.
That's where we are now as a sport. Like, ultimately, you cannot buy a Premier League club now, realistically, with the odd exception, unless you're a billionaire, and particularly not a top club. So that's just where we are. Like, there's not really much more else to say about it, you know?
Yeah. So should we get away from the pitch? Because it's boring, isn't it? let's round up Deadline Day, shall we?
Do you reckon more people watch Deadline Day than watch that game?
How are you counting people watching Deadline Day? Because if it's tuning in for a bit, I'd imagine definitely, yeah.
Because it's got to be
Sky Sports News' biggest day of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say
so. Some distance.
I'd say so. But the reason I ask is because I can't get away from the idea that it's actually now some of the most boring television.
It's really
anywhere.
Strange to watch now, because they've made it a lot more slick and a lot less chaotic.
Yeah.
And that's made it worse.
I think that to me, the golden rule of TV, and particularly live TV, is you show and don't tell. Right. Mm. it feels to me like if you're telling over and over again, it's kind of like anyone can do it, right? Most people, presentable people who are intelligent, can read an auto cue, right? And the whole idea of live TV is like you're showing people lots of different things. It's making it unpredictable. It's making it interesting. And they've had to, for various different reasons, I suppose, they feel like they've had to remove all this unpredictability from it. And ultimately, what it is now is just four or five people sat around in smart clothes in front of a slick studio, essentially discussing admin and the same admin over and over again. And I watched about an hour and a half of it, as I know you did as well, Vish. And I just sat there thinking, this is so boring. Like, and not only that, you know, I don't criticize people unnecessarily, but like you've got people in there who clearly don't know anything about, say, the players that are coming in from European clubs because they're bread and butter. And you know they won't know anything because they spend all their time watching the Premier League because that's what they're employed
until
to
Andy comes on and looks absolutely in his element when he's talking about like
Andy can actually do it. Yeah. Andy, but Andy's like the one-eyed man in the line of the blind, right? People think of him as some kind of deity because he actually has watched Enzo Fernandez play outside of the World Cup. So the whole thing just seemed a little bit odd. And then towards the end, I mean, them showing Big Ben striking 11.
Yeah.
They showed every single bong as well. Which is like, it just contributed to being the most slow-paced, odd, boring TV.
Unless there is a last-minute move for Gaetan Bong, you don't need that.
Yeah.
And he's there the whole time.
Yeah.
Also, it'd be really funny if one of the things they didn't realise, if this happened to be the case when they updated Big Ben, that one of the things was it went to a 24-hour clock, so they had to stay for 23 bucks.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. But what do you think about it? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. Because I think what happened with, well, I think what is happening with Sky Sports News, and particularly what they did with Transfer Deadline Day, is they made it into a spectacle and then they were uncomfortable with the spectacle that it became because, you know, I always found it a bit pathetic that people would turn up at, you know, training grounds and for Deadline Day and be there right through the night with the reporter, like, you know, annoying the reporter, sticking a dildo in his ear.
But it's interesting.
Which is funny, though, in terms of a spectacle. Well, yeah, for listeners who weren't aware, that genuinely happened.
Yeah. Well, that was probably part of why it's a little more slick now, right?
Yeah. Well, that was the peak of it, I think.
Yeah.
Really. That, you know, it flew too close to the sun at that point.
Yeah. But it's not slick. Is it slick?
No.
Well, in terms of it, the way it's presented, I think, as you say, you know, people sat around in smart suits. You've got segments with it. You know, you've got Tony Pulis on for a bit. They'll have him for an hour. They'll do a little package about his previous Deadline Day exploits, things like that. It's all very, like, calm, collected. They know what's happening in 2 hours' time. Whereas in the past, they were just flying by the seat of their
which
pants.
Is what live TV should be, right? And
that's what I mean. I think it's worse for being slick.
For the most part, it just looks like a sales conference webinar. Yeah. You know, which, like, it's almost like if you children in need, for example. If children in need,
don't ever go at the one-eyed teddy bear.
No.
To be fair, though, Children in Need has been around for a long time, and they still haven't fixed his eye. So,
Where's the money going? No, but if your Children in Need was just
is it like Stevie Wonder, where people think he's not blind?
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
If Children in Need was just a totaliser and a load of people talking about, you know, impoverished people, it wouldn't be the whole point of it. Is that lots of stuff's happening?
Yeah,
nothing's happening. No, the problem with Sky's Deadline Day is nothing is happening.
Yeah.
And even if it is happening, they can't show you it because they're not going to show you it. They're just going to tell you about it. So you've got a guy in a suit with his phone out saying, oh, yeah, the Fernandez deal's still not done.
Yeah.
Like, who are they making the show for? Because if I'm someone who's desperately trying to get another Chelsea transfer in because I love Chelsea, I'm probably going to follow David Ornstein on Twitter.
Well, okay,
and he's not on telly. So what's the point?
This is the thing. So you just asked, who are they making it for? They're making it for people who are getting their news online, who aren't actually watching.
So there's no point doing it then.
Exactly, yeah. Because a lot of the... So, you know, Sky Sports have some very good journalists, and a lot of the thing with breaking news is that, you know, people lament that, you know, Sky Sports sources confirm so-and-so. But that does happen. The story comes out, you speak to your own sources about it. There might be a bit of crossover. Those might be the same sources that gave that information to the person who broke the exclusive. But ultimately, you know, that is still a thing. But because of how people consume their news now, because of, you know, I suppose accounts that are solely dedicated to one club's transfers, that is often the best place to get them because they'll, you know, they might link to Telegraph Sport or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you end up following these journalists or these aggregators for that information. And so often when it's talked about live on Transfer Deadline Day, it's because they've just seen it off Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you say, you end up throwing to, I don't know, because he was there yesterday, I'm picking him out, but you end up throwing to Chris Boyd about a player. Chris Boyd is actually a very good pundit, but you can also get that information from someone who's seen him live on Twitter who will do you like a 10-tweet long thread about it. So yeah, it is, I think personally it's utterly redundant.
It feels like it's out of time.
Yeah,
I haven't caught up with that yet. Yeah.
Very much so. I think they're trying to address that. It isn't quite working yet. But in the window itself, Premier League clubs spent more than £275 million yesterday alone. Yeah. £815 million spent in January. That will be once Enzo Fernandez to Chelsea is confirmed.
That's the biggest January ever.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. Absolutely huge.
Which is mad in the light of Jim. It was only a couple of years ago. People were saying the whole thing's going to change because of COVID and everything like that. And the bubble's going to burst now. And now we'll follow it up with the biggest January ever.
Well, I think what's happened, though, a huge part of that is, of course, because of Chelsea spending. Because it's so sort of gargantuan. Todd Bowley's brought in this new tactic, really, of spreading out the amortisation over very, very long contracts. And I think what that's doing is, particularly for selling clubs outside of England, they are whacking 20, 30 million on a player. We had a situation a few seasons ago, well, in the seasons before COVID, do you remember, there was a spike in transfer fees. It was like, it was really hard to tell what value was and what a £30 million player was.
I think it is
suddenly
anyway,
it seems
though,
less.
It?
But that's happened again, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really difficult to know, like, what is a £70 million player for now, or are they someone who's your banking is going to be a success in the next 2 or 3 years?
It's, yeah.
To me, it feels like transfer fees are a kind of a weird phenomenon anyway, because they're essentially just dictating how much the buying club wants to have that player and how much the selling club wants to sell them, all bracketed up with the length of the contract. To me, that's really what dictates it.
Yeah.
And possibly the age of the player as well. But I don't think it's that helpful to think of them. I think of it in a broad sense. This is what a £30 million player is. Because I think every situation is completely individual. Because like the Enzo Fernandez thing, as you mentioned a second ago, you know, he's only played something like 77 senior games.
This is what I mean. Like, a player, if you're spending that much money on a player, surely it's a player for now. You know, it's a player who's proven, who's going to come straight in and affect your team. And the precedent has been set a few times here. That's not necessarily the case with Fernandez and Mudryk as well, who are, you know, both clearly very talented, very good players, but are players where, well, they just simply haven't played as much as that fee would dictate. So it's a funny one. So who stood out for you guys in the window? The Jorginho to Arsenal transfer is quite a surprising one.
I found myself talking myself around to that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, Jorginho is a player so unglamorous that they won't let him be Brazilian. There is no question, though, that he improves Arsenal's midfield backup over an injured Mohamed Elneny, for one thing. But I think it's a smart move given the market, really.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like he's more of a body than a direct replacement for 100%. Elneny, because he's a different kind of player. I suppose he does have metronomic qualities. I'm fascinated to see how he will actually operate with Arsenal, because I feel like the only way he could operate is a deep lying midfielder,
yeah,
who then has the support of, you know, one of Xhaka or Partey alongside Odegaard.
He'll play instead of Partey, I would think, but
he's not an energetic midfielder. You don't watch him for Chelsea and think, well, there's the guy who gets about. His best form for Chelsea came when Kovacic was running around like a lunatic. Yeah.
But Xhaka will do that next to him, and I think
be the lunatic.
Essentially,
the
role he was born to play. Arteta really, really values control. That's what
he wanted him for a while.
Yeah, he wanted him when he was assistant at Man City. He's been chasing him a long time.
Right. So do you foresee him as he is someone who will close out games for you?
Currently the holding pattern is very much that if a game needs to be won, Rob Holding comes on as an extra defender. Right? And I mean, this puts that through the roof as a sort of contingency plan. Also, Thomas Partey is fairly injury prone. I mean, he's not a like-for-like replacement. Their stats actually match up fairly well. Jorginho isn't the quickest, but as I say, Arteta really, really values controlling games, and in midfield in particular. That's what he's been trying to change about the club, and that's what he's done very successfully. That is the entire point of Jorginho, isn't it? It's having a secure presence in the middle of the park.
Yeah. I was actually surprised at the reasonably negative attitude towards the signing from certain people. Like,
yeah.
I feel like a lot of it was informed by its Arsenal fans saying another player from Chelsea. We buy players from Chelsea and they're a bust, like Louise or Willian or whoever. And ignoring the fact that, like, there are a lot of players around that Arsenal were signing that didn't work out, whether they were coming from Chelsea or not at that
point.
And
they're all different individuals.
Different individuals. And a lot of time, as we know, it's the environment they're going into, which now at Arsenal seems pretty swept up and pretty high operating. And I think it's not only just controlling games towards the end if you're already a goal or two up or whatever, but it's also like, you know, down the stretch, it's, you know, I just can't see an argument against the fact that you're signing a player who, like, a few years ago was right up there in the Ballon d'Or,
yeah,
and who is literally a world-class operator who can give you more control.
Yeah.
In individual games, you go and play, I don't know, say you go Arsenal playing Leeds, you know, late in April or whatever, and Leeds are on a real resurgency or they're battling against relegation or whatever, and they're a high-energy team, you can just get someone in. You can play Jorginho and say, that's fine. We'll just tick the ball over. And Arsenal, and Chelsea, by the way, have just paid £100 odd million for a metronomic defence midfield player as well. So, like, clearly they're important players, those types of players.
Yeah, I think there's an idea amongst certain sections of the Arsenal fan base on Twitter, and as well, you shouldn't read too much into that, I think, because you see some real, let's say, low cognition on the internet at the end of transfer deadline day across the board. Absolutely. It makes you realise that dumbing down very much happened.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense that the idea is that you, as an Arsenal fan, you just don't like it if they sign a player from Chelsea, especially a player who's over 30 from Chelsea. But again, you've got to look at each transfer on its merits, and it's very difficult to get a player who's willing to play that role at all, let alone one with so much experience and who can just slot right in. So I think it's a good bit of business. Edu out was obviously trending on Twitter.
It's gone down well.
That can't be for us.
That was just Jim.
Honestly, I mean, they are, again, it is the ones with very poor cognitive ability.
No, but you're still running that click farm, aren't you?
Cost of living crisis has gone up, and we've all got to do things that we're not necessarily comfortable with. But
start an OnlyFans like everyone else then. Click farm.
I read yesterday that he's known in the Italian national team as Radio Jorginho because he's so vocal.
That's nice.
Great.
That is quite a cool nickname.
Did you see how Mark Cucurella found out about Jorginho moving? Yeah. There's just a weird. Like, you shared
this
in the WhatsApp.
That's what you want from deadline day, right?
Yes.
That's the sort of chaos.
Fish,
you
shared it. So you explain to listeners if you haven't seen it what happened.
So it was tweeted out by goal.com, and it looked like that it was one of those things where they had time with Mark Cucurella, and they were throwing to him about, you know, yes or no questions, or, you know, getting him to answer things off the top of his head. And he was asked about who the smartest player he's played with is. And without hesitation, he said Jorginho. And he's obviously doing this as a, you know, Cucurella as a Chelsea player, probably organised through one of Chelsea's sponsors, probably at Chelsea's training ground.
Yeah.
And someone from behind the camera says, oh, I don't know if you can say that because he's about to go to Arsenal. And he was in shock. But I agree with you. That's what deadline day is
about. Absolutely.
That sense of, like, fucking hell, yeah, anything's up for grabs. Yeah. It's genuinely hilarious because his reaction is so, actually quite sincere and quite sweet. There wasn't a sense that he was getting in trouble. It was just like, and the idea that even transfer deadline day is wild to footballers, was that in itself was quite eye-opening.
That's part of the fun. There were a few hints of it as well when Enzo Fernandez's move was being discussed, because it just sort of kind of reappeared, didn't it? I think we all thought that one was over, but early confirmation of the move came when a group of Chelsea fans scanned the flight logs of the plane the club used to bring loan signing João Felix to England and discovered the plane had a return trip planned from Farnborough to Lisbon for the entirety of deadline day. So a little, the sleuthing was there. There's a little bit of that. Did his medical in Portugal, as we learned over and over and over again. And that took Chelsea spending to over £600 million under Todd Boehly. They spent £322 million in January alone, which is more than the Premier League during last season's January window in total. And they spent more on the Bundesliga, Serie A, La Liga, Ligue 1, and the Eredivisie combined. It is just giddying.
I had a big night out a while ago with a mate who, the day afterwards, he got called up by his bank to authorise some transactions because they didn't believe that was genuine.
A mate.
Including like Sainsbury's at 6 a.m. And he had to confirm it was him. Todd Bowley's getting that call today. Right?
Constantly. He's got a whole person for that. He's got a whole separate phone for someone to go, yeah, no, honestly, it's Todd again.
Do you find it interesting how often the media is trying to rationalise this?
Yeah.
So I'd love your perspective, Vish, because you're a bit closer to the journalism game than we are. But, like, to me, it seems completely absurd. It's like a complete madhouse because of the obvious facts, and there's an Occam's razor quality to it where you're like, well, the guy's got loads of money, he's come into to football for the first time, and he just wants all these players because he thinks the way to do this is to buy up for the most part all these young players, no matter what it takes.
No more draft for me.
Yeah, exactly. And then the media come in and go, well, what he's trying to do is this, that, and the other. To me, it's absurd. It's absurd even by the standards of the Premier League.
But I suppose part of the job of a journalist is to rationalise stuff. And, like, football is an absurd world. So a lot of the time the explanations are pretty wild. Like, you know, there was a journalist from The Athletic who covers Brighton who was talking about, you know, Tony Bloom's tactics around, I suppose, Caicedo. And it essentially, when you boil down his words, they amount to they have a price that they want to sell for. And like loads of people were taking the piss out of him for that. But ultimately, like, that's information he's garnered from the club. And it sounds ridiculous, but it is a ridiculous world. Mm. And Todd Bowley's project at Chelsea is, I think, the height of that. Because, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you. Sometimes you read, you know, some of the, or certainly you see some of the reaction from pundits and journalists, and you're like, but do you really believe that? And I suppose it's not about whether they believe that. This is what the club believe. This is what they think they're achieving by doing this.
This is what they're aiming for.
Yeah.
The player situation, I just think, seems completely ridiculous. Even if you move to one side, that the chance that Graham Potter has got of blending all those players is close to zero. Yeah, and the reason for that is because the logistical side of it is essentially like it's essentially regulatorily impossible.
Yeah,
basically, they can only register three of the seven players they've signed to the Champions League squad because the UEFA
this season's Champions League squad,
only lets you add three players of the seven players they've signed in January. And they've got to do that by tomorrow. They haven't, so it's not even like Potter's got a chance to go, right, this is where the players have settled, this is where they're living, this is their situation, this guy's family's over, this guy's isn't, this is how they train. He's got to make that decision by tomorrow, right? And then you take into account they've got 23 players out on loan. They've got, I think, three players in every position in that squad, and a percentage of them obviously won't be able to be registered for the Premier League squad either. It's essentially saying that Graham Potter's job is, with two hands tied behind his back, he's going to have to blend this team, who are 21 points off the top of the Premier League, and basically have almost zero chance of getting in the top four next season. To me, it seems completely ridiculous. I don't know why that's not being mentioned enough.
One of those players is stranded in Paris.
Yeah.
That's how bad this is.
They just forgot about him.
Yeah.
There's too many of them.
It's like Home Alone Lost in New York. Reboot with Hakim Ziyech.
Well, the admin side to it is fascinating, really, because it does. Like, I was following the event of yesterday, and I felt it was more absurd than normal. And then you, like, at the last moment, you get the situation with Matt Doherty at Spurs, where they can't officially loan him out to Atletico Madrid because of the number of loans they have out. So they just terminate his contract, and he's on a 6-month deal there.
Yeah. Mm. Do they realise he's not Kieran Trippier? They're not going to pull that off again.
I love that move for him. Yeah. I love that move for him, just chiefly because it's like out of the frying pan into the fire.
Very much so.
Do you like Conte? Not really. Doesn't he literally slagged me off the other week saying if I wanted to lose the game, I'd pick Matt Doherty or whatever. Worse to that effect. Oh, good. Do you want to play for someone worse? That's what's going to happen now. Before we go to the break, very quickly, I think Pedro Porro is one of the most interesting signs of the window, because for the first time under Conte, Spurs will have a really dynamic right-sided wing-back who would be able to do what Conte wants him to do, and that might make a big difference for Spurs.
Sporting also replaced him with Hector Bellerin, who had his eyes shut in the announcement video for some
probably
reason.
Probably a fashion thing.
Yeah, almost certainly.
you wouldn't get it.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. So after this, João Cancelo.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Only one of the best performances of the season.
Really, that good? You thought it was one of your best performances of the season?
By far.
What makes you say that? What did you like about it?
Everything.
So some news that's just come out this morning is that Antonio Conte will be taking time out of football to recover from surgery after having had his gallbladder removed today. So we wish him well, of course, and hope to see him back on the touchline soon.
Wow, that's surprising.
Yes.
I didn't know about
he's,
that.
He's been through the ringer, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Antonio Conte. Personally, he's had a lot of stuff going
he's
on.
He's had a very difficult time, so yeah, we wish him well.
Do you reckon that's how he got Pedro Porro? Just went to Daniel Levy, look, I've had a really tough time.
Just get me a fullback.
Stop fucking about.
Get me one fullback I want.
It's my birthday next week.
I'll chuck my gallbladder at you.
So, João Cancelo. We were talking about him being phased out on Monday, and he's been phased out so effectively. He's now joined Bayern Munich on loan with the option to join permanently for over £60 million in the summer.
Chelsea will pay that for him. Don't worry about it. Have one yourself.
Yeah.
Where am I going to play? Well, not in the Champions League.
Chelsea. Todd Boehly's going to be sat in a restaurant, and the big decision makers at Bayern Munich are going to be on the other side of the restaurant, and Todd Boehly's going to see him walking in. And rather than send over a nice bottle of wine and say, nice to see you, he's going to send them João Cancelo. So, I've spoken to Pep, it's fine, help yourself. And then João Cancelo's going to walk in, like, sit down in his tracksuit and just sit there and eat dinner with him in a Bayern Munich tracksuit.
Don't put your elbows on the table.
So a lot has come out about Cancelo reacting quite badly to not playing.
It's been fantastic.
Not just at Man City, across his career as well. He's known for behaving essentially like a volcano, was the word, when he's not playing. And we know that, you know, Pep Guardiola likes to rotate his squad. I think when you're fighting on all fronts, you need to rotate your squad. So I think my question for you guys is that, Cancelo's probably one of the best players in the Premier League, or certainly was while he was there. Does this weaken their squad for no essentially good reason, or does it improve the togetherness that City need to push on in the competitions they're still in?
I think it. I think they lose a string to their bow. Personally, I think fair enough. Yeah, but if he was a problem, then the togetherness thing. But bear in mind how he operates at left back. The fact that he does basically have a free role. He's been one of the best players, I think, at City. Essentially doing what he wants City fullbacks to do in terms of come inside and offer an extra body in the middle, because he offers an attacking threat, not just a receiver and redistributor of the ball. But I think he's outstanding. I think the league is like poor for his absence personally, but I say that as like an admirer of his talent. Ultimately, though, if it does bring them together, then that's the job done.
Did you learn better in class with a kid at the back throwing pens at your head all fucking afternoon?
No, but I had more fun. When it was someone else's head.
Yeah. I don't think Pep's about that life. Yeah, I think Pep wants to win football matches.
I do remember some of those moments more, actually.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's also a really good reminder that like the players, I mean, because like Cancelo's like 28 years old now. So he's kind of like old enough to kind of understand how the world works.
Like grow up.
Yeah, basically. I think so. And I think you make some good points. I think, you know, you're going to make an argument around, you know, players of that nature, a lot of them who play in that position feel like they've been coached how to be good going forward. But then you get occasional ones who are naturally rich. So, for example, Cancelo in the final third is amazing. Yeah. He's brilliant.
He doesn't look like a defender at all.
And that's why he's going to be a big miss for them. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that's come out about him, Guardiola's got to maintain some kind of control.
Of course, and
to an extent, and there'd be the odd exception to this, but, you know, if Eric Ten Hag can move on Cristiano Ronaldo for kind of the same reasons in principle, then I'm sure that, you know, it's important that Guardiola maintains control and moves on Cancelo. Now, I know Cancelo's a better player now, and Ronaldo's a big ego and all the rest of it. Maybe it's not that helpful a comparison, but my point just is that Guardiola's always been about the team. Guardiola's got that policy, famously, where if you're not playing on Saturday, you are not allowed to be seen to be negative. Mm. You have to subscribe to this whole idea.
It's the no bad faces policy.
There we go.
Is what he calls it.
It's a clumsy translation, but I like it.
I like it a lot.
But
if you're not going to subscribe to that, you're going to go. Yeah, you're going to go, basically.
And there's also a thing where Guardiola can turn to him and say, sorry, this is a squad full of brilliant, world-class players who are all, you know, committed to the cause and towing the line, essentially. Why do you think you're better than them? Why do you deserve special treatment over a De Bruyne, a Bernardo Silva, you know, Ruben Diaz?
So, reading between the lines, I think the straw that broke the camel's back for him seems to have been that Guardiola started playing Rico Lewis ahead of him.
Mm.
And he thought that Rico Lewis is like, whatever he is, 18 years old, and it was an insult. But that's just a really narrow-minded way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And I think also, you've got to understand the appreciation of how sassy Cancelo has been about this as well, because apparently he stopped paying attention in meetings when Rico Lewis got picked ahead of him, which I think, to be absolutely fair and even-handed, everyone in this office and everyone listening at home would be in big trouble if that was a fucking accusation. Because who among us, etc. But also, the day after they played Arsenal, he obviously didn't feature, didn't come off the bench. He posted a picture on his Instagram story accompanied by the words, "Don't let anyone dim your shine."
Yeah. So he himself
Paris
has claimed,
over here.
He himself has claimed that he wanted to get more playing minutes, and he has also since blocked multiple Man City fan accounts on social media.
It's so petty.
It's spicy.
Yeah, but have you seen Man City fan accounts on social media?
It's absolutely
there was a Man
amazing.
City fan on Twitter yesterday or this morning, essentially, really, to boil it down to the basics, saying, why can't we do what Chelsea are doing at the moment and spend £600 million players?
Yeah.
We're a joke of a club.
Yeah, it's so short-sighted. So this same fan who I've become obsessed with got into a ding-dong with an older supporter, I think was secretary of the Man City official
supporters club.
And this kid said to him, "You Main Road fans are so entitled, and the reason we haven't won the UCL, when your generation fucks off, we might have a chance. Fucking Grandpa Rimmer mentions arguing with a 19-year-old. Go knit or something." Incredible.
I can't even buy a house because of you.
Yeah, it's come to the conclusion that the reason for Man City's quote unquote problems are the older fans who stuck by him through thick and thin over the last 30 years. You're the fucking problem, mate.
Yeah.
Funny show some loyalty.
The kids' idea is that they accept mediocrity, right? It's like, my God. I mean, they essentially have an unlimited budget. They won the Premier League with 100 points a little while ago. So, I mean, I don't need to justify that Man City are good. It's an incredible.
I think Jim's nearly talked himself out of Arsenal winning the league.
No, I'll tell you, did I say this to you the other day? I said it to one of my Arsenal supporting friends the other day. I firmly believe Arsenal will lose the league on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
I do. I worked it all out. I looked at the likely results and I can see that happening.
Well, I am trying my best to not think about any of that. So,
how would you feel if that happened? Was it better to have loved and lost?
How would you feel if your house fell down?
Is it better to have loved and lost? That is an absurd question.
Well,
that's actually a bit out of order because there's been a bit of some silence down my road. So
is that right?
Yeah, that's actually out of order. Bit crack in the living room at the moment. No, is it better to have loved and lost? You had the hope, you had the dream of it. Would you rather have the dream and have it snatched away or not have the dream?
Think back to Portsmouth winning the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And then think to right now.
Yeah.
And you tell me.
I don't know what they're doing now. I checked out of it. I had a decorator around yesterday. And he said to me, "What football team do you support?" I said, "Portsmouth." And he literally said to me, "You are the only one, no?" I was like, probably by now. Yeah, he's like, he never heard of the idea.
So he hadn't even heard that tattoo bloke, Jim from Portsmouth. What's his
Jim
name?
Jim from Portsmouth. Out of order to you. John Portsmouth Football Club Westwood.
Yeah,
thank
not
you very
from
much.
Portsmouth.
Is my dad's full name. So you're not going to answer that. You don't want to think about it. You don't want to engage.
You know the answer.
Okay. You would rather finish fifth than lose the league on the last day of the season?
This is a stupid question.
All right.
And I'm not engaging with it.
Fair enough. Nor are our listeners probably, so fair enough. Move on.
Would you rather have scissors for hands?
So, big news coming out of the football, really. Sad news as well. Tony Pulis has officially retired from football management.
Mm. Is it sad?
I thought he already had.
He's had a good run.
Got to be honest, he's not had a job for a while, is he? Was at Sheffield Wednesday last. Didn't work out very well. It's just sort of been quiet. They kind of wheeled him out on Sky Sports News. They've tricked us, haven't they? They've got another exclusive there that's not an exclusive.
Yeah.
Such a slow news day that this has trickled down into our running order.
I was going to say, I thought Sky Sports News had got bad, as I mentioned in the first half. I didn't know Tony Pulis had been on it. I'm not sure how to feel now. But I mean, to be fair to Tony, he did front up about the Sheffield Wednesday thing, didn't he? He said, you know, it didn't go well for a number of different reasons, but I need to understand, you know, it was a mistake. you know, of mine as well. And I need to take responsibility for that. And a lot of managers wouldn't do that. And I think we'll also always remember Tony for getting the arsehole with James Beattie and headbutting him in a changing room while he just was just wearing like a little towel.
Yeah, it was at the Emirates that actually.
It was actually. It was the Emirates after
They'd had a very poor performance. He'd cancelled the Christmas party.
James Beattie
made the mistake of then questioning that publicly. And Tony drops the nut on him, possibly a number of nuts, because the towel's going to come off, right, in a situation like that.
I think if you were going to commit to the headbutt, you'd be disappointed if your towel stayed on.
James Beattie was wearing the towel.
No, Tony Pulis
was wearing the towel.
Yeah.
So he had a shower.
Of course he did.
But
they'll take the warm up. They'll do all the running around the touchline. They'll need to have a shower after.
He was very much a tracksuit manager, but he stewed over it
in the shower then, and then came out in the shower. I was like, right, the Christmas is cancelled, and one of you is getting nutted here.
As I understand it, they were disappointed with the result of the Emirates. It was in the Emirates away dressing room, and Pulis had come out and said he's cancelling the Christmas party because he wasn't happy with their performances. Beattie took issue with that in the shower. I guess they were in the shower at the same time. And Pulis just thought, I'm not having this. And Pulis is also famously always refused to comment on it. Said that throughout my career, I've always really tried to never let any dressing room story get out from me. I'm not going to kind of break that code of a murder kind of thing. At the same time, though, you just deny it. You just say, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
He's refused to do that as well. Yeah. So it obviously did happen.
Yeah, right.
And I also think he deserves an amount of credit. I'm not going to sit here and endorse kind of violence, apart from a few circumstances and exceptions, of which this is one, I think, actually. Taking on James Beattie.
He's got a big head.
He's much bigger than him and much younger than him. I think is a great display of alpha male dominance.
It really is, isn't it? There's no other sort of
As we all know, Jim, you can't do anything these days, can you?
You can't.
You can't stick the nut on anyone.
Can't go around headbutting people.
No. Would you like to see... I mean, I can see Arteta dropping the nut on someone.
Oh, no. He'd take out a glove and slap them across the face with it, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He's more the duelist.
But he's not always in control of his emotions, is he?
No,
that's true.
When he falls out with players, it does tend to be quite a sort of rapid descent into kind of
animosity. Have you heard the Pulis story? It's not really a Pulis story, but it's quite funny. Of when the players, I think, because when he was manager of Crystal Palace, at the end of the season, the players all went to Vegas for like a post-season holiday. Have you heard this story?
No.
And one of them, I can't remember who it was now, one of the Crystal Palace players, before they went, grabbed a load of Pulis apparel from Selhurst Park or from the training ground, and took it with him. And when they all went down to this pool party, they dressed up as Pulis with the tracksuit and the TP on it and everything like that and the baseball cap and started wandering across the pool. And all the players thought it was Pulis and were like, shit, what the fuck is he doing here? And at the end, he whipped his baseball cap off and he wasn't. So it shows you the reputation of Pulis.
He might even have had a mask.
Tony Pulis mask.
Really, something like that.
Can you buy a Tony Pulis mask? In many ways, that's the great man's legacy. Tony Pulis was born where he was born, at the time he was born, and if he had grown up knowing that they'd better buy commercially a mask of his face, he'd have said, my life will be a success.
Cushioned to protect your own face when dropping the nut
dropping
on people,
the nut, exactly.
I'd imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Tony Pulis, we hardly knew ye. I look forward to him inevitably coming out of retirement within a year.
To do 6 months at West Brom.
Something like that. I forget who they were playing. There was a game where they were 1-0 up at half time and they were apparently like knocking it about really nicely.
And he got pissed off.
Pulis was really pissed off. He said, get rid of this Barca shit. And he had a tactics board. So he basically just crossed out the midfield, pointed to the 18-yard box, said, get it in there.
And they lost
2-1.
Yeah, I saw that. I remember that. Yeah.
Incredible stuff. So more of that. So Vish, your boys, Man United, are in action tonight playing Nottingham Forest. 3-0 up already. In the Carabao Cup semi-final. Probably going to be off to Wembley. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, pretty good. It feels like, I mean, it's famous last words, but it feels like an opportunity to get a few bodies back as well. Ten Hag mentioned yesterday
the disrespect.
I mean, they're 3-0 up.
Nottingham Forest just signed Jonjo Shelvey.
Yeah.
It's true, actually.
It's a chance for them to bed some players in as well, right? Because they've done exactly what they did in the summer and just bought loads of players. You worry that it will upset the order and they'll have to sort of go back to square one a little bit.
Quite cool players as well. Keylor Navas,
that's amazing.
Felipe from Atletico Madrid, and obviously Shelvey as well.
Who's the most glamorous of those three, would you say?
Shelves.
The Costa Rican goalkeeper who've won several Champions Leagues, over 100 caps, or Jonjo Shelvey, who used to scream at Alex Ferguson.
I'll stick with my original answer. Shelves, yeah. Can he ping it, though? He can't. He probably can.
He looked like a bin man at St James's Park last night. I didn't know who it was.
I sort of forgot he was there.
Yeah, they showed him in the stand with this big cloth cap on, and I literally was like, who is that?
I was very surprised that he came back for the game. It would be, imagine if he got to the game. He's like, sorry, mate, we gave it to Nobby Solano. We didn't need to turn up. Yeah. It was free.
You've got a game tomorrow night.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what it was. Yeah, he was there at St. James's Park yesterday. He's like, I'll have a bit of this. So maybe he's pumped up for tonight if he does play. Mm. Yeah, I mean, like, so Anthony Martial, Jadon Sancho on the way back. United were basically running on fumes. Obviously, their congested period goes on, but certainly by the Arsenal game, certainly after the Arsenal game, it felt like they were scrabbling around a bit. And then with the injury to Eriksen, courtesy of Andy Carroll, getting in Marcel Sabitzer is very exciting. So exciting that when I read that United were in for him, I was like, I really like this player. It makes a lot of sense. Won't happen. Yeah. And then it did. You know, he's obviously got a lot of energy. He was a heartbeat of that RB Leipzig side that established themselves as a Bundesliga force.
I remember seeing him at Spurs Stadium. Leipzig beat Spurs 1-0. They'd beat them 3-0 in the first leg, and Sabitzer scored two in that game. Also, I wasn't at that game, but I saw that on TV. And I just remember thinking he was the absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
I just thought he was so good. He could do everything. He basically dictated the whole game. And then when he went to Bayern Munich, you think, oh, that part of the world, that's the biggest club around, so you kind of make sense. I was always thinking to myself, I'd love to see him in the Premier League. And given that they've got that injury, as you've mentioned, I just think that's such a great signing.
Yeah. Really timely bit of business, really well conducted as well. Man United really feel like they're getting their house in order when it comes to
that sort
of stuff.
Which pisses me off, to be honest.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's annoying. Like, we need clubs at all times to be fucking things up.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of this show.
Absolutely.
So he's played 27 times this season, so that includes for Austria and Bayern Munich. But he last played 90 minutes in like November 20 against Italy in Italy's like World Cup warm-up, tune-up friendlies. So I presumably he's not going to come straight in. There'll be a bit of, I suppose, getting up to match speed. But yeah, I'm quite excited about it as well. Yeah, he's got a lot of energy. He's kind of, I hope he's not shit.
I don't think he will be. I think he'll be ready to hit the ground.
You never know. He might be shit.
So, no, he won't be. I'll tell you why. Because Paul Merson's had his say.
Go on.
Paul Merson's had his say. You've seen this? He says he doesn't get in the Bayern Munich team. he's way off that. If he was that good, he'd be pushing. So again, it goes back to panic. There was no interest in him on January 1st. Now it's a panic buy. If I'm a Manchester United fan, I'll be looking and going, he doesn't get anywhere near Bayern's first team. So if he's not playing their first team, why would we want him at our club? Is he going to make us better? Are there players there already who should be better than him? In my opinion, yes. So Merson said what he said, which means Sabitzer will be an absolute rip-roaring success at United now.
I mean, if people can't change their minds after the decisions that they generally make on January the 1st, then they're fucking idiots.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, look, everyone's got great intentions on January the 1st.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. We're making it's annoying, actually, because Man United, the hierarchy, did say on January the 1st, our New Year's resolution is to not sign any world-class Austrian midfield players.
Yeah.
They've fucking gone back on that now.
And dry January, so embarrassed themselves.
We have.
One thing could be related to the other, actually, on that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You didn't do dry January, did you?
No, I didn't. Never said I would.
Your Instagram would be empty. Absolutely fucking empty.
I said I was going to do damp January.
You'd lose so many followers. Every time Vish pops up in the little stories bit on Instagram, it's a bottle of wine. Always a bottle of wine. Or some kind of food accompanied by a bottle of wine.
I'm all about the pairings.
Yeah. It's a sweet, sweet life. And on that, we're going to end the show. So thank you very much to the pair of you.
Cheers.
For rocking up and doing the show. Tomorrow on The Continent is back, David joins Dutton and Andy for all the latest on the transfer window across Europe, so you can catch that tomorrow. Thanks for listening to The Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever
made that connection?
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.